More Idaho Matters now from the studios of Boise State Public Radio News. I'm Gemma Gaudette. As our cities continue to grow, so too does our need for green spaces. Areas like public parks play an important role in our communities, providing both urban and environmental benefits. These benefits, however, can be really easy to overlook. This is why environmental and urban historian Quinn Anderson will be exploring the impact of these spaces, as well as how they've changed over time, in an upcoming lecture with the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. Quinn, I am so happy to have you on the program to have a preview of this.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
So for folks who may not be quite familiar with the term, tell us a little bit more about what you mean when we use that term green space.
Well, I like to think of it as a sort of deceptively simple terminology, right? I think there's this innate understanding that we have of like, what is a green space? Well, it's a space that's green, right? So a lot of people will gravitate towards, you know, parks, gardens, but it really is a lot more flexible than that, right? I mean, a cemetery, for example, is probably a perfect example, or maybe a botanical garden, right? So anywhere within a city where, you know, greenery, biodiversity thrive, places where you might be able to take a break, I lump those all together in green spaces. So it's very broad, but I think it's for the better that it's very broad.
And I would think that these areas, these green spaces, can be pretty beneficial for our mental and physical health. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, there's the sort of like two halves of it, right? There's the physical health, which is a lot of these spaces, you know, provide ample opportunities for recreation, right? You can take a stroll in the park, sort of wander meandering paths. Many, especially the parks here in Boise, have a lot of great recreation opportunities. There's horseshoes, there's bocce ball, there's playgrounds, there's ballparks, stuff like that. But the mental health is just, you know, just as important. You know, people write about what are called third spaces, spaces that are distinct from your home space, your workspace. These third spaces are sort of neutral territory for people to interact with their peers, get out of those two very, you know, those other places where we spend much of our time. And there are so many studies, you know, that come out year on year that basically demonstrate the really positive benefit that even just seeing greenery, being around greenery, getting out and outdoors have on your mental health. And especially as, you know, the work days get longer and, you know, maybe as days get smokier, you need these types of spaces to really keep you sane.
Well, and then what about like urban areas, right? Like talking major cities. I mean, I think about New York City and Central Park being in the middle of that city, which when you go into Central Park, I mean, I think it's frankly almost stunning how peaceful it can be and how quiet it can be. I mean, Paris has Luxembourg Gardens and it is so similar, right? It's like you have these huge green spaces in these middle of these vast, just urban areas. Why is that important as well, that we really look at those really big urban areas to have space like this?
I think it's important to look at those because a lot of people, I think, tend to sort of naturalize these spaces over time. Like a lot of people sort of consider a place like Central Park as like the last fragment of the New York landscape preserved over time and through the centuries. But in actuality, it's more of like a technology, right? Like when you say like, oh, you know, these big cities, there's the kind of clangor and crush of urban living. You know, when these parks get designed, especially like Central Park, and this was an express goal of Olmsted, you know, these places are supposed to provide that reprieve and they're designed to provide that reprieve, right? You know, you see these large tree plantings at the edge of these parks to reduce sound. You know, the grass and all these, you know, biotic communities that live here provide fresh air. You know, you have these sweeping vistas that are, you know, relaxing for the mind to perceive. So these spaces are really oftentimes designed as the antidote, you know, because people have this idea, and especially for environmental historians, it's a rather complicated idea of nature as being the sort of antithesis and the solution to urban living, right? So these spaces are, you know, very much like a technology in the way that they get employed in cities.
So I want to kind of talk about some of your research itself, in particular around a space like the Boise Greenbelt. When you talk about that connection between green space and urban pollution, why is something then like the Greenbelt, why does it kind of fall into that? Can you talk a little bit about that?
So my thesis took a look at the Greenbelt in part. And what I kept finding, especially for all the parks in Boise, not just the Greenbelt, is that so many of them are remediated sites of heavy industry, right? Especially for the Greenbelt, people are dumping cars, they're dumping tires, fence posts. There's offal coming out of, slaughterhouses, all kinds of nasty stuff being dumped into the river. The connection that I think people sort of let go by the wayside is that I think these polluted spaces are oftentimes picked up as parks for two reasons. One, there's the sort of economic argument of it's the cheapest, it's cheapest land to buy. Nobody wants the river that's filled with blood and fat, right? So it's very cheap to acquire land on the other side of it. But I think also they kind of inspire looking at the city in different ways, right? It's very interesting that throughout history, and you can find this replicated in a number of cities across the world, you know, people look at polluted spaces and they think, not only how do we get rid of this, but what can it be? And it's really telling that oftentimes the answer for what can it be is a park. You know, we seek to find solace from this nasty pollution in this sort of beautifying nature that everyone can take part in.
So what role do you think history plays when it comes to, designing green spaces? I mean, we talked about Central Park, right, in Olmsted and like his vision, right? But what about future green spaces?
I think history has so much to give this because it would be very easy to have like a very technocratic approach to the design of parks. And for many years, that was the idea, was sort of like, well, we're going to have these sort of very regimented spaces, especially in the sort of early 1920s. Parks were very ordered. It wouldn't be uncommon to see, a sort of band leader marshaling children for organized activities. But moving forward and understanding the history of these urban spaces, I think really allows us to recognize how we are kind of entering into a new era of park design, right? You know, no longer are we restricted to, we need to have very passive recreation. We need to have promenades or we need to have sort of guided recreation. Now we can be a lot more flexible with what we do with our parks. And especially as we start facing, some of these really dynamic, intractable almost problems of the future, parks and, what limited urban space we really can marshal is going to be super important. You know, I think of vest pocket parks, tiny little parks, less than an acre lot that you can squeeze almost into any area. Or, the number of really cool energy parks that exist around the world, like the Copenhill, which is a heating power plant that's also a ski hill in Copenhagen. Even Lucky Peak, it's a state park, but it also has an actual power plant built onto that, that campus as well.
So before I let you go, I mentioned at the very beginning of our chat, you'll be hosting a lecture where you'll be talking more about urban parks. Can you tell us when and where, people can hear you speak?
Yes. It's going to be tomorrow at the Yonke Research Facility. At 10 a.m. through the Osher Institute. And it's going to cover a lot of these themes that we've covered today, but it's going to have a lot of historical examples as well. We go even farther back into the past, and there's some pretty charismatic green spaces that I get to talk about. I get to talk about the world's smallest park, Mill Ends. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite. It's a single tree in Portland.
Oh my goodness.
It's going to be a grand time.
Well, thank you so much for making time for us to chat about this. I really appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
New from the Embedded Podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.